There are three kinds of solar storms that we're familiar with. One of them is called a coronal mass ejection. One of them most people know about is a flare, and the other one is a solar particle event. And they all really go back to one cause, and that is that the sun has a little trick of converting magnetic energy into motion, heat, and light. And it does it very, very suddenly, catastrophically, sort of like a lightning bolt, if you think about that. Mm. And there are varying sizes. Sometimes these are smaller, and they happen several times a day. Sometimes they're very large, and they only happen a few times in 10 years.
And sometimes they can have quite an effect on Earth, can't they?
Yes, they will have an effect on Earth infrastructure systems. The most direct is on satellites that are in orbit. And then it has an effect on the ionosphere, the upper atmosphere of the Earth, and that disrupts communications and some navigation systems. And then sometimes, relatively infrequently, it actually will induce a current on the Earth, and this feeds back into our power generation systems, and sometimes will cause a transformer to burn up.
Well, now all of that sounds kind of scary. You have a policy or process to keep that from happening?
Well, it's sort of like hurricanes. Situation is that you can be aware of it, and then you can take precautions, and there are a number of precautions that can be taken. And some of these are quite simple. Aircraft that fly over the poles where these disturbances take place are just diverted around that area. Sometimes you can, if you know it's coming, you can shed load on the generation system, and that helps mitigate against damage. It's momentarily inconvenient. So I think that aren't able to modify the sun, but we are able to have situational awareness, and we're able to take some steps to mitigate that.
Now, I understand that some of these types of events, like the coronal mass ejection, have very long cycles. And back around 1912 or 1913, there was an event that occurred that, should it occur now, and maybe we're due, that it could cause really mass destruction of some of the infrastructure. Am I making this up, or is this something that you're concerned about?
Well, I think that what happens is there are probabilities, and we've only been able to see this kind of thing since about the time of the Civil War in the United States. About 1859 was the first time they were ever detected, and the detection systems have gotten more sensitive. So as time has gone on, we have more information, we see more of them. And the kind of thing that you're talking about has sort of a 10 to 100-year horizon. It's not inherently predictable at the present time. We don't know enough physics to say this is going to be a big flare at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. What we can do is we can say there is a probability that we'll have a flare of a certain, not less than a certain size. And then that gives us a sense of having an alert, and satellites can be saved or airlines can be diverted.
So NASA definitely then has a role in preparation for something like this, or even recovery if something like this happens and it does damage a satellite.
Well, I may have misled you. NASA has a role in attempting to discover the cause or the physics of how this happens. We are a research agency. And so we have a whole raft of satellite assets that provide data to NASA research programs, but they also provide data to NOAA. And NOAA has the assigned problem of providing warning to users. And we don't step in their way. We just give them our data rather directly. And we do it from a number of vantage points, and we do it in a number of relatively automated ways, so that we don't have to think about it ahead of time. We don't have to remember to turn something on because we think the solar weather is going to get hot. It's on all the time. So our role is that we provide data, and we provide theory, and we provide models. And we go around this triad all the time of theory and data and models. And our data from our research missions is actually useful in terms of producing operational predictions. And so are our models, and we provide those out of the program to anybody who wants them, actually. They're all on the web.
We're speaking to Dr. Richard Fisher, he's the Heliophysics Division Director of NASA's Science Mission Directorate. Well, the question is, should we worry about this? I mean, we worry about terrorists getting weapons of mass destruction. We worry about oil spills. Should we be actively worried at this point about sunspots?
Well, I think that there are people in the government, FEMA, who are considering whether or not this is one of the kinds of events that are sort of categorized as low probability but high impact. And I believe that study will be ongoing for the next year or two. And, of course, we'll try and support that as best we can. So the best answer I have is maybe, although in the operational world, civil and military, these alerts are used all the time to deploy, let's say, ships in the Gulf that are drilling that use GPS for position, or aircraft flying over the pole, commercial planes. And the reason that it's more in our faces now is that we use an infrastructure which is more sensitive than it used to be. We have a lot of almost all communications are mobile. A lot of them are anyway. We've gone from 1,000 polar flights a year over the North Pole to perhaps 10 times that number. So it's our own awareness and utility of space which has sort of raised the stakes a little bit.
So these 11-year cycles and these sunspots, these are not new phenomena. This has been going on. It's just now we are more aware of it because we have more vulnerabilities to it.
I think that's correct in some measure because it's the issue of the influence on things that use electronics or are susceptible to magnetic fields. And if you think about it, around the Civil War, we started using a telegraph. And right away, they started to pick up solar effects on the telegraph. And it's gone on from there to communications and navigation through the First and Second World Wars and through operating systems that were both civil and military during the Cold War. And now we have an infrastructure which is even larger, and it has, some sense, runs on the edge of being disruptible.
There are people that are scaremongering about this a little bit, I think.
Well, I think in any circumstance when you don't know exactly what's going to happen, there's the possibility for speculation. And many people, I mean, this is a human trait to know where am I right now? What's going to happen next? Should I be worried about this? And I think that the answer to that in case of solar storms depends on kind of where you're sitting and what you're doing. Now, if you're an astronaut in space, that's a lot different than being in, let's say, gardening on the Earth. The water that you have and the quality of the air and light isn't going to be affected by a solar storm. Mm. If you're an astronaut in space, you're going to worry about the proton flux through your environment. And those can be quite high sometimes, and it is a potential health hazard. And intercontinental power generation and let's say air transport, two things that are influenced by solar weather, they're kind of in the middle between those two extremes. You know, we got along pretty well for thousands and thousands of years without any knowledge of space weather because we're on the Earth with its great big shielding magnetic field and its great big thick atmosphere. And so from the standpoint of an ordinary life, most of humanity is never worried about this. Now, when we get to power generation, an outage of 30 hours is sustainable. The emergency services step over that rather easily. There are batteries and the police keep up and the ATMs keep on working and whatnot. When that gets out a long ways, let's say 10 or 15 days, like with a big ice storm or with a hurricane, mm-hmm. then there are societal impacts that are not completely predictable. And so I think that there are these once per 100-year, once per 200-year events, which we don't really know when they're coming. And I think that it's we're a little more vulnerable than we used to be.
Now, there are cycles, 11-year cycles. What should we? Where are we in the cycle right now, and what should we be expecting?
Sure.
What should we look for?
Well, okay, the we've just had a solar minimum about a year ago. And what that means is the magnetic activity on the sun is very, very low, and there isn't much to see or think about or worry about. We are ascending phase of the solar cycle where we anticipate, but don't really forecast with any reliability. We anticipate that it's going to be around 2013. The big events tend to be scattered near the peak or beyond it in the solar cycle. So I would anticipate for the next year or two, we'll see increasing solar activity. We'll probably have more alerts to GPS operators and airlines, and we'll rise to a maximum where these will probably be daily or near daily, and then we'll tail off and we'll go through the cycle again.
GPS. Now you've got my attention. I live and die by my GPS.
Oh, I know. I do, too.
So that'll be affected? I don't care for that.
Well, there have been occasions in the past where there are changes in the Earth's ionosphere, and those delay or disrupt GPS signals. Now, the magnitude of that usually is the order of 300 meters. And at an extreme. And so at 300 meters, three football fields, you kind of get in the zone of getting to your dentist.
Yeah, yeah.
And for people who live in urban canyons, the reception might get spotty. So
I
that
see.
Might be something you'd be concerned about, and probably it may have already happened. I don't know.
Well, for that matter, AM radio is vastly affected when this happens, too, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Propagation through, by reflection off of the upper ionized atmosphere changes very rapidly. And if you're trying to listen to Omaha, Nebraska, the signal kind of comes in and out. If you're nearby a station, not so bad. If you're we don't use this anymore, but old guys like me, used to use handheld civil radio, breaker.
Yeah,
and,
CBs.
The CB was kind of vulnerable to that. I think everybody I think this is the history of the whole business, is you switch your systems to a more robust system. And so from navigation by GPS, you can go navigation inertial, and then you can back off to navigation dead reckoning. Navigation by directions. And so I think that the thing is that with knowledge of space weather, you can make the appropriate choice.